On page 97, let's just read Revelation chapter 8, verse 1 and 2. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. I heard someone's interpretation of that one time. They said that means it has to mean that women aren't in heaven yet. That's not nice, is it? That's not nice at all. That's not nice at all. Verse 2 says, and I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Have we heard of the seven trumpets before? Have we heard about anything about seven trumpets or? Pardon? Jericho. There you go. That's pretty recent, right? Right. Very good. A couple of weeks ago. Yeah. So now what we're having here is another one of those allusion quotations. So this is what he's referencing. What about the angels? Let me go ahead and point that out. He saw the seven angels. Where have we seen seven angels before in our study?
Seven churches.
Seven churches. The angels of the church at. And so I want you to just be thinking on that because John's linking all of this stuff together. So we've got this allusion link happening. It's a reference basically to Jericho. The seven trumpets, as we saw, as we looked at that a couple of weeks ago at Jericho, was the blasting of the prophetic word over and over and again and again and over and over and again and again as they marched around Jericho for 6 days, once a day, and then for the seventh day, seven times, for 13 times. All that they were hearing was that blasting of those trumpets. And this is necessary in understanding what's happening here in chapter 8. So in the Revelation, the seven trumpets, just as like with Jericho, it's sounding a desolation. It's sounding that desolation. It says there was silence. And then so we've got that. And then half an hour. Now, silence for the space of a half an hour. Interestingly, the half an hour is how long it took the priest to burn incense. And that's exactly in context with the next verses. Burning the incense took that long. And John had, of course, seen this hundreds of times. And so he's referencing the incense and what's happening in the spiritual dimension. Look at verse 3 on the right column. And it says, another angel came and stood at the altar having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. Let me just point out the golden altar. Of course, this is a reference to the temple or the tabernacle of Moses. And the burning of incense, which is a type of prayer, the burning of incense was so important and so separate from every other aspect of the godly or the Christian life, in that it had its own altar. There was a golden altar of incense. This is how important God saw this burning of incense or this type of prayer. So it was at the golden altar which was before the throne. Verse 4 says, and the smoke of the incense which came with the prayers of the saints ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. So John is making a link here with incense and the prayers of the saints, and it's ascending up before God. Okay?
Who were the saints?
You? Me? This is what the saints of God were praying. And it was ascending with the incense. The incense becomes a type of prayer ascending to God. It's a visual image. Have you ever burned a lot of incense in a room?
Well, we won't talk about that.
Okay. So it's difficult to associate that with prayer, huh? But in its original purpose, that's what its purpose was.
Yes. Oh,
No. Okay, no. It's the believers, okay. The believers. Okay.
And then in verse 5 it says, and the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar. Now look what he does. Got to get it now. The prayers are coming out of the censer. The incense is rising before God, and he takes this golden censer. And it's filled with the fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. Now, what word would you think that word earth would be? What's the Greek word, would you think?
Gay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's G. And there were, you said it correctly. You said gay is the way you should say it. It's just spelled G-E. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings and an earthquake. Now, what does that voices and thunders and lightnings and earthquake, what does that link you with anything that we've studied? Well, it does, but I want us to hook up with something else before we just leave the thought.
Moses,
yeah. Well, something we've talked about.
Is it about the under the altar, those people under?
That's the souls under the altar. That's a little bit further in here, but that's not. I link it up with the cloud, with the glory cloud, with the lightnings and the thunders and the cloud that come on the Mount Sinai when the law was given. And of course, the cloud was there when Christ was crucified, and all of those things, he ascended on the cloud. And we've studied the cloud, but I just wanted to throw that in there while we were thinking about it. So the burning of incense and the smoke from the incense, these were visual aids to assist them in understanding prayer. And again, it had this special altar that God thinks so much of it, being a separate part of a child of God's existence, that it has its separate place in the worship aspects of the Lord. The burning of incense was to take place twice every day. Now, I don't know. I mean, I know Pam just was referencing that she has burned it before, but haven't you burned incense before? I mean, you've seen it. All right. We was at a youth camp. This was years ago, and I was I'd been studying the temple and the tabernacle and all these things, and so I was kind of into this. And so I wanted to teach them about prayer, and I actually used these verses that we're studying today in that teaching. And so I got incense, and we were in this is a pretty large room, and I was going to show them. So I gave each one of them a little container of incense, and I lit the coals, had the coals, fiery hot, and then every one of us that were there, and there was, I don't know, 50, 60 kids, I guess, that we would come by it, and we would pour our incense on there. It would become a prayer to us, and I was trying to get them a visual of how prayer ascends. Yeah. This was good, and so we poured our incense on there. That room was so thick. I mean, you could breathe. Of course, it wasn't easy. I mean, but it was affecting everything. It was bothering our eyes. And what was so interesting about it is, of course, you go home and you change clothes and you go to bed or whatever. It was late at night. But the next morning, I got up and I put on got my shirt to throw them in the to be washed. I said, "Man, these things still stink," And it was so amazing because it just gets in everything. I mean, when that incense goes, and it's just the thought of prayer, and prayer is that way. It's such an intense visual of what prayer is. So this is what John is wanting us to see, is that they had gotten this visual going here of the prayers of the saints ascending to God. But then he says something that's really interesting. He takes that censer and he throws it into the earth. On page 98, left column, come down about halfway, the paragraph that begins with the seven angels. Do you see where I am? The seven angels were positioned to sound the seven trumpets. However, they could not sound the trumpets until the prayers of the saints ascended up before God. God was awaiting their prayers before he released what must happen. Now, what were these saints praying? What do you think that these saints might be praying? Pardon? You think they were praying to fix Jerusalem? Fix this Judaism system? I don't think they were praying that at all. I think they were praying to destroy Jerusalem And they were praying it. They were doing exactly what Jesus had told them to do. Jesus had told them to pray, the kingdom come, and the will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Yeah, these saints weren't praying fix Jerusalem. They were praying that Jerusalem and the age of Moses would be destroyed. They were praying the kingdom of God come. They were praying the will of God be done. Jesus said it must be laid desolate. This is seen in the next verse as heaven responded to the prayers given. And it says, the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings and an earthquake. It's just interesting to me that these prayers, John links all this together, the prayers going to God, but yet the censer and the prayers being thrust into the earth. Okay, what do, the lightnings and the thunders, do you see that is the glory cloud? That's the glory cloud? The angel threw the fire on the earth. Has fire ever come on the earth like that out of heaven before?
Yeah.
Sodom and Gomorrah. That's a good one. On the right column, I've got you several here when this has happened. And so, again, I'm wanting you to see that these are the prayers of the saints. And they're praying, destroy it. In Genesis 19:24, then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And then the next one is about Egypt, when Moses was working the plagues upon Egypt in Exodus 9:23. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and the fire ran along upon the ground, and the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. And then the next one is about those that rebelled in the wilderness, Korah and his company, in Numbers 16:35. And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. And then in Elijah, Elijah was always burning people up. In 2 Kings 1:10, and Elijah answered and said to the captain of 50, if I be a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And there came down fire from heaven and consumed him and his 50. And the rest of are kind of along the same lines there. But when God throws down fire from heaven, then it is a judgment. And this censer was full of the fire, and it was cast upon the earth. Now, the fire of the golden altar were the prayers, or was prayers from the saints. This fire prayer is now cast into the earth. It's not showing the Lamb's. It is not showing the Lamb's acceptance, but rather his rejection and his wrath. So I wanted you to see that. That's interesting, because the saints were praying this prayer, and this chapter is basically around this. So look on page 899 with me. Let's read verse 6. And the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to stand. Now again, the seven angels are a link, an allusion link that he's already taught us about, the angels of the seven churches. The church leaders now are involved in what's happening with the destruction. They're praying against Jerusalem. They're coming against it. The letters to the seven churches, they had the seven angels. I'm just trying to skip through my notes here, this little things I've got underlined. So this would be the angels of those churches. And the point we're making here is the seven angels involved with the churches in chapters 1 through 3 were involved with the seven trumpets, or they were the seven trumpets. This is I'm going to show you in just a minute. I'll point it out to you, but those trumpets were voices. So the seven angels were bringing forth this prayer. They were having the churches pray. They were coming together in a prayer to bring down Jerusalem, bring down Judaism. Now, who blew the trumpets at Jericho?
The priest.
The priest blew the trumpets. And so we got these leaders of the churches, the priests, the people of God, doing the same thing. So that's the point we're making, is the seven angels involved with the churches, and they were bringing this upon the earth. All righty. What do I want to do now? Let's turn on to page 100. And let's read. Man, it seems like I'm going fast. Let's read the first paragraph, left column. John mentions the destruction of trees. As he says, the third part. What am I doing? I've had to have skipped something. Okay, let's go back to page 99 and let me read verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. Now then, page 100. John mentions the destruction of the trees as he says the third part of trees was burnt up and all the green grass was burnt up. Now, I want to read here a quote from Josephus commenting about the desolation of the land of Judea and Jerusalem as Titus and Vespasian and all these guys came in there. Let's read this. In fact, let's read a couple of them. He, speaking here of Titus, ordered they should bring timber together and raise banks against the city. So the trees were now cut down immediately, and the suburbs left naked. And then drop down to that last paragraph of that quote. They had cut down all the trees that were in the country that adjoined to the city, and that for 90 furlongs round about. And truly, the very view itself of the country was a melancholy thing. For those places which were before adorned with trees and pleasant gardens were now become a desolate country every way, and its trees all cut down. I know we saw the thing. Now, what Titus did as he came and took Jerusalem and Judea, what he did when he took Jerusalem is he built this huge wall around it so that no one could escape. I mean, they were sieged. And then, a little later, because the siege was so long, he built another wall, a second wall around it, because he felt like they had tunneled out. So he backed off, and he built another wall around it. And so all the trees of the whole area were cut down. And they were going for miles and bringing in more trees, more timbers. Let's read verse 8. The second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed. Does anyone remember what we saw the primary thought of a mountain was? Does anyone? Place of worship. That's good. It's religion, our religious worship. It's places of worship, both positive and negative. Go on to page 101 with me. Yes?
Why is it
1/3? 1/3. Well, I got that in here for you. He talks about great. In fact, that whole right column there is about the 1/3 thing. Do you see on page 100, the whole right column? I'm just talking here about the 1/3. All these are references to the 1/3. The first angel sounded, and the third part of the trees, and verse 8 talks about the third part, and 10 about a third part, and 11 about a third part, and all of this is coming forth as a third part. And I take you through the scriptures here in showing you what this third part is relating to. So you can look that up. All right. But I want to talk about this mountain for just a minute. The word mountain in the scriptures, the first time it's used, and you know how I am about first use. I like to find the first use because that's the thread, that's the DNA of the thought through the rest of the scriptures. And the first part, it was amazing to me, and I didn't really look at it until this afternoon, but the first part is the same verse that we looked at today in Genesis 12 and 8 concerning Ai. This is the first time that the word mountain is used in the scriptures. And it says, and he removes, talking here about Abraham, he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. That's the first time that mountain is used, and interestingly enough, it's in referencing worship. So mountain becomes the thought of worship. You know how I feel about that. The first use of a word mountain is going to be the thread all the way through. And here I've got you some mountains on page 101. Come down on the left column. It's in the first paragraph, but it's at the end. I got you all these mountains of worship that were relevant to Jerusalem and or Judaism. Mount Sinai, Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, Mount Ephraim, Mount Bethel, Mount Carmel, Mount Horeb, Mount Zion, Mount Moriah. All of those mounts were places of worship. And of course, there were also idolatrous worship as well. Deuteronomy 12:2, 1 Kings 14:23 all talk about that. But here in the Revelation, a great mountain would be cast into the sea. Now, what does that mean scripturally? Will it literally be a mountain, a great mountain thrown into the sea? And if it were a great mountain thrown into the sea, what difference would that make? I mean, is that a big deal? Yeah. So, is it a religious great worship? Is that what God is really trying to get us to see? That religious worship is going to be brought down. Now, what about sea? It's cast into the sea. What does sea speak of? Have we people, nations? Yep. Show you some of these. The Revelation itself interprets some of these things, and it does this one. It represents the nations. Let me show you these. We've looked at this before. In Revelation 17:1, it says, one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters. And then it drops down and it explains, it starts interpreting that for us in 17. And it says, then the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. And then, of course, in Isaiah, we looked at this one before too in 17:12, it says, oh, the raging of many nations, they rage like the raging sea. See, nations and sea. Oh, the uproar of the peoples, they roar like the roaring of great waters. So if a mountain is religion or religious worship and is linked here to Judaism, and a sea is nations, if this is the apocalyptic thought that John's projecting to us, what is John telling us? Yep. But I think it's you're right. But it's going to be thrown into the nations. It's going to be cast. It's going to be dispersed. It's going to be like a mountain thrown into the sea. It's going to be a dispersed thing. It's going to be chunked away. The religion is thrown and it will be dispersed into the world. And of course, that would be mentioning Judaism. Look back at page 101 with me on the notes and let's read the last paragraph on the left column. It starts just two lines on this page. When the land of Philistia fell to the Romans in AD 66 through 73, those not killed were taken into slavery and dispersed into all the world. And Josephus writes this. He, speaking here of Vespasian, also set fire not only to the city itself, but to all the villas and small cities that were around about it. Some of them were quite destitute of inhabitants, and out of some of them carried the inhabitants as slaves into captivity. Titus also sent a great number into the provinces as a present to them. Talking about the Jews, talking about the slaves. He sent the slaves, the Jews, into different provinces as a present to the province, that they might be destroyed upon their theaters, gladiators. by the sword and by the wild beast. But those that were under 17 years of age were sold for slaves. And then this is a pretty good book that a guy by Thomas, I don't know how you say his last name there, Adenopoulos. Anyway, his book is called Jerusalem Blessed and Jerusalem Cursed. Let me read that one to you as well. What happened in 70 AD represented an unprecedented humiliation of the Jewish nation. The temple, the national symbol of freedom and faith, was gone. The Jew who survived the carnage lived to envy the dead. Able-bodied men were sent to work in the mines of Egypt and Sardinia. Many were sent to Rome to work on the construction of the Colosseum or to Corinth, where Nero had ordered excavation of a great canal. Some who showed special strength were sent to cruel deaths in gladiator shows. Women and children were sold into slavery. We do not know how many perished, but the magnitude of the disaster for Jews is suggested by Josephus, reported at 1 million. Let's keep on reading here. The thought of the mountain and worship is seen and will shake us when we truly know what Jesus meant as he spoke with the woman at the well. She said, "Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you say that Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship." The temple was on Mount Moriah then. What Jesus said to her will shake us if we understand Jerusalem is about to be destroyed. Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father." And a great mountain was cast into the sea. Okay, page 102. Is that making sense to you? Yep. That happened. And I was thinking one time, and I really kind of wanted to start the lesson off tonight by asking you, I mean, I think you're seeing what I'm projecting and what I have been projecting. But what one thing, if there's one thing that's put you over the edge as far as seeing the book of Revelation differently, and it will help me in the future and help all of us, actually, to as we share the book of Revelation with people. But what one thing put you over the edge as far as changing the way you thought about the book of Revelation? Does one thing, any specific thing come to you?
I think it's really helpful when you step back before Matthew, when you go through the conflict with the Pharisees and you see the context.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the Olivet Discourse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful. That first time I studied it, I said, "Wow, look at this. You know, this is pretty heavy." Yeah, Olivet Discourse is good. Yeah. Yeah, when you find out that really happened. We're never told. So that was one of the biggest events. I mean, that's one reason that Jesus came. So that's good. But I like to know what people think, because it helps me in my preparation. It helps me the next time I'm sharing with somebody about it. So I just wanted to kind of ask you. So if you ever something just pops into your mind, maybe right now you can't think of something, but maybe, you know, something will come to you. If you will, write that down, because I would really like to know what it was that kind of put it over the edge for you. Oh.
I always seen the angels, and more or less I always taught that the seven angels that were talked about was God's angel of vengeance. I mean, God's rolling the seals and sounding the trumpets, and that's what
sure.
I was always
sure.
Saying. That was
really and I don't think that we need to do away with angelic.
No.
But at the same time, that's not all that means. They're messengers.
Right.
And we are angels. You know, We are messengers of God as well. And that's what the word agalos actually means, is messenger. That's good. It is good. Okay, page 102, the left column. Let's read verse 10. And the third angel sounded. So we've got the first, second, now the third angel. The third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven. Now, I've got you some pretty neat stuff back there in the back where I've quoted some of these dispensationalists and their thoughts about this star. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters. Many men died of the waters because they were made bitter or poison. What is wormwood? It's a poison, yeah. And once it got in the water, it poisoned it. So he's giving us, though, an apocalyptic thing here. You know, he's hooking us up. So what's he doing? This word is easily studied, and it's funny to me that, you know, when you're reading their books, they really don't reference the studies. There's 8 different verses of Scripture that talk about wormwood, and so we've got sufficient information to really know what this is all about. So I need to show you some stuff about wormwood. Jeremiah talked about wormwood, and let me read you this, and I want you to make sure you see who he's talking to and what he's talking about. And Jeremiah 9, in chapter 9, verse 11 says, "And I will make Jerusalem heaps and a den of dragons. And I will make the cities of Judah desolate without an inhabitant. Who is the wise man that may understand this? And who is he to whom the mouth of the Lord hath spoken, that he may declare it? For what the land perisheth and is burned up like a wilderness that none passeth through. And the Lord saith, because they have forsaken my because they have forsaken my law, which I set before them, and have not obeyed my voice, neither walked therein. But have walked after the imagination of their own heart, and after Balaam, which their fathers taught them." Now, before I go to the next verse, which I'm going to, let's make sure. Verse 13 says, "And the Lord saith, because they have forsaken my law, my word, which I set before them, and have not obeyed my voice, neither walked therein, but what they've done," verse 14, "is they've created this thing out of their own imaginations, out of their own heart." And then verse 15 says, "Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will feed them," even this people, "with wormwood, and give them water of gall to drink." Verse 16, "I will scatter them also among the heathen, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, and I will send a sword after them till I have consumed them." Now, who is he talking to? Make sure we... Yeah, pretty clear, huh? "And I'll make Jerusalem heaps and make the cities of Judah desolate." So, that's who he's talking to. And then a little later in his prophetic word in Jeremiah chapter 23, let's read verse 14 and 15 here. It's also speaking about wormwood. "I have seen also in the prophets of Jerusalem an horrible thing. They commit adultery and walk in lies. They strengthen also the hands of the evildoers." Sounds like a president, doesn't it? "Strengthen the hands of the evildoers, that none doth return from his wickedness. They are all of them unto me as Sodom, and the inhabitants thereof as Gomorrah." The reason I like this particular one in this particular chapter is because it's already talked about the fire being thrown down, just like he did in Sodom and Gomorrah. In verse 15, says, "Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts concerning the prophets, behold, I will feed them with wormwood." Now, who's feeding whom? I mean, God's doing this. So this isn't something that, you know, the devil's doing. This is God doing something. "Behold, I will feed them wormwood and make them drink the water of gall. And from the prophets of Jerusalem is profaneness gone forth into the land." Now notice where the profaneness has come from. The people that should be bringing the word of the Lord, they're bringing forth a wormwood. That's how God's going to do it. Am I right on that now? Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts concerning the prophets, behold, I will feed them with wormwood and make them drink the water of gall. For from the prophets of Jerusalem is profaneness gone forth into all the land. So wormwood was a poison. And once it was in the water, it poisoned the water. And so what is water a type of? We talk about this sometimes here. Recently, I actually talked about it as we went through the Jordan and crossed over into the Promised Land. We were talking about going through the waters of the Jordan. Anybody remember what we were talking about water being in the Scriptures?
It cleanses.
Cleanses, yeah, it does. But what is the thing that it specifically says? Anybody remember? Okay. In Ephesians, we see here, in Ephesians 5:26, that he might sanctify and cleanse it. Here he's speaking about his church, his bride, with the washing of the water by the word. So it's a word. It's the word of God. And then it's also the Spirit. There we go. 7:38. There we go. He that believeth on me, as the scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. But this spake he of the Spirit. So the Spirit and the word of God is the water that is going, and this Spirit and this word have become poisoned. And what has happened is the teachers had poisoned, the prophets had poisoned, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they had poisoned the people with their teachings of the word of God. And of course they had. What were they saying about Jesus? And they were poisoning people. We poison people, we leaven people, we mess people up by words, by our spirit. They taught against Jesus. Wormwood was all in the land, but the Pharisees looked bright. They looked good. They were a star. They were to the people. I mean, they looked good. Right. Now, that's what Jesus said, wasn't it? Yeah, dead men's bones, just a whitewashed sepulchre. Sure. And so we're starting to see here what John is linking up. The people were poisoned and they didn't even know it. Now, here's what Jesus said about the teachings of the Pharisees in Matthew 16:11. How is it you don't understand that I was not talking to you about bread, but be on guard against the yeast, the leaven, of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Then they understood that he was not telling them to guard against the yeast used in bread, or the leaven used in bread, but against the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Teaching poisons us. And Jesus warned the disciples, you know, you guys be careful. Be careful what you listen to. Be careful how you listen. Be careful what you listen to. Now, let me ask you this. Do the teachings of Judaism continue to poison like wormwood? Or have they changed? They're still wormwood people today. They're still waiting on the Messiah. They're still saying that Jesus was just a good man. There's not going to be a Messiah. The whole word's wrong then, you know. All the prophets have missed it. And what's interesting is the whole world is affected by Judaism and by their teaching. And he's thrown it into the nations. He's taken this mountain called Wormwood, this big star, and he's thrown it into the nations. And all the nations are polluted with this. Dispensationalists attempt to make this a giant meteor, you know, this star. They try to make this mountain or this star, they try to make it. And I've got you some hilarious quotes at the back there of what their contemporary teaching has. And if we have time at the end of the lesson, which we're not, but if we have time, we would look back there and look at some of them, and you can do it. So let's go to page 102 and get me in the right column with me. And read Revelation chapter 8, verse 12. It's at the very bottom, right column. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Now we've talked a good bit, you know, about this. This is collapsing universal terminology. We're in chapter 6, and we were talking about that a good bit, and I gave you many references about that. And so it's a reference to the termination of a society or a nation. It's not talking about the sky folding up and scrolling, and it's not talking about those things. What it's talking about is the collapsing of a society. So let me show you this from Isaiah chapter 13 and verse 9. We've looked at it before, but we'll just use one verse this time because I know you've already got this one. It says, Isaiah 13 and 9 says, "Behold, the day of the Lord cometh cruel, but both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall cause her light to shine." Now, this was Isaiah's prophecy concerning the Babylonian Empire and it being overthrown by the Medes and the Persians. And this is the terminology, this is the apocalyptic terminology that he was using to describe that. Now, that happened around 600 BC. If I'd had time, I would have looked up the exact date, but it was somewhere around there when that actually happened. But no literal star stopped shining, no constellations stopped giving their light, the sun didn't stop shining, and the moon didn't stop shining. However, that society collapsed, just as Isaiah said that it would. So as we think about these things, and every time you read about these stars not giving their light, this is apocalyptic, you know, terminology that just helps us understand a society is coming down. It happens every time you find it. That's what's happening. Peter even talked about it, and we talked about it before in Acts chapter 2. He's quoting from Joel. This is that Joel prophesied about. And he starts talking about the moon and the stars and all those things. And he says, "Save yourself from this perverted or this untoward generation." And he's talking about that generation's coming down. And of course, Jesus said, "This generation shall not pass." So, anyway, that's what we got here going on, too. So he's coming back, and he's hitting that again. So look at page 103 with me, left column, and let's do verse 13. "And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst." Now, again, what is angels? There you go. "An angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth." Guess what that word earth is? Yay, yep. "By reason of the other voices of the trumpet." Now look at that. These trumpets have voices. So we're probably not talking about a piece of brass, are we? We're probably not talking about a piece of brass. Because these trumpets have voices. Not a mouth, a voice, right? Voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. So trumpets are actually the voices. And now I'm going to go over here on the right column on 103. Come down about halfway. Find me, I said, the second paragraph, and it starts with "these woes." Remember that these voices were saying, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth." These woes would be an echo of what Jesus had already told the disciples, the religious leaders, and the people of Jerusalem in Matthew chapter 23. And so I've got them listed here for you. "But woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." That's verse 13 of chapter 23. Verse 14 says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." Verse 15, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." Verse 16, "Woe unto you," and 23, and 20, 25, and 27, and 29. All of these are the woes unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Now, who are these woes given to? Jerusalem, Judea, the religious system. See, all this is in context of the mountain and the fire and what Jesus has said. These were who these woes were given to. They're given to not the people of the whole earth, are they? Who did Jesus speak this to? Was he speaking it to you and me? Or was he speaking it to those people in that temple that day? Yeah. So we got to break the thought that this book of Revelation is a horrible thing. And it's going to, you know, what it really means is God's going to blow up this earth. That's not what it means. What it simply is a prophetic word about the end of that Mosaic age. That's what it's talking about. Notes on page number 6 here. Okay. Here what we have are the church leaders, again, doing what the priests did as they marched around Jericho, sounding the trumpets. It's all linking together. They sounded the prophetic word as a trumpet at Judah and Jerusalem. Now, we saw that what that was God's prophetic word. He says, I have given into your hand Jericho. And then he prophetically says how it's going to fall. He says, march around it. Sound the trumpets. Don't listen to anything else. Don't talk. Nothing but the trumpets. Over and over and again, around and around they went. You know, and I don't know how long it would have taken to march around that city, but it took a long time. And that's all they heard again and again and over and over and again and again. And on the seventh day, they went around it, and they did it all day long. Joshua even says, you know, we got to get up early today. And all day long, that's all they heard. And so what he's telling us here is the saints of God, began to pray like incense. And what happened as they prayed is that God had this angel throw down this fire. And then came the wormwood. And what God did as they prayed, and as they sounded that trumpet, with the whoa, 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 they kept sounding their trumpet, and Judaism came down. And that's what chapter 8 is about. It's one of the clearest, I think, of all the chapters as far as being connected and having a context to it. And so as you go through it, you'll see these links and these things that happen. The prophetic voices were sounding. They were praying. They were prophesying to Jerusalem. They were prophesying. They weren't asking God to fix it. They were praying that God would destroy it and do exactly what Jesus said, the kingdom come and His will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen? And it happened. It happened. All right, any questions?
Together, we can change.